this week's parsha is Shlach, and as I mentioned already last week in the parsha share that I delivered, what happens in this week's parsha on many levels should not surprise us. The terrible failure of the Jewish people, in the sense that they make such a colossal mistake in being unable ultimately to enter into the land of Israel. We saw already last week in Parshas Bar-Losla the underpinnings and the beginning of the failures and the realization that the people were just not yet ready. That just a little over a year after they left Egypt, that transition from slavery to freedom, the people were needed more time. And so what happens in this week's parsha should really not surprise us as it unfolds. And as I compared it last week to the halfway mark in the famous play My Fair Lady, where they try to, those two men, I forget all the names, the characters, but the two men who wage a bet, can they turn this this very simple, poor woman who grew up in the slums of London, can they make her into a lady? Well, they learn it's not so simple, and it takes a lot longer than you thought it would take originally. Same thing happens with the Jewish people. So that was all last week. What I want to do this week, I'm not sure how far how much we'll cover. There's so much here, but we'll look at the Torah's how the Torah describes the story of the Meraglim, the spies. There is a little different or a very different perspective that's actually told by Moshe Rabbeinu when he recounts the story in Sefer Devarim. For another time, we'll discuss that because it's very interesting why he gives a different perspective on the events as they unfolded. But right now, we'll just look at how it's presented in Sefer Bamidbar. So here we go, beginning of the Parsha. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe l'emor. So interestingly, it is God speaking to Moshe. Right, God tells Moshe, whatever you have, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe l'emor, God is going to instruct Moshe. And God tells Moshe, Shlach lecha nashim, send to you men, the asur es eretz Canaan. Right, and they will, lasur, there's different ways how to translate it. We generally assume it means to spy, that these individuals, they will spy out the land of Canaan. Asher ani nosein l'vnei Yisrael, the land I'm going to give to the Jewish people, ish echad matei v'asaf, yishlach l'kol nafsivam. One man per tribe, select one person per tribe, and go spy out the land. Again, it's interesting, the word here is used by the Asuru, not the Viraglu, not to spy, the word Meraglim, but rather Lasur. There's a Netziv who tries to explain the difference between Meraglim and Luragel and Latur. And one could be a more focused type of searching. Luragel and Lasur could be more of a general. We're going to see in a second the exact directions. It's a little bit more, it's sort of like different college and undergraduate. And graduate school, you sort of learn the humanities, you get a general sense of the different disciplines that are out there. When you go to graduate school, you're already much more focused on what you want to accomplish and what discipline you're going to study. So Ragel could be a more focused type of searching. Latour could be more general reconnaissance, just get some general information. And here it's Viasuru. And so I want to point out right away, it sounds like whose idea is this to send spies? If I didn't know anything else, it sounds like it's God's idea, right? Just like God tells Avram, lach lecha, right? Go for yourself, right? You go and, go to this land that I will show you. Here, shlach lecha. Now, Rashi immediately comments the Mephorshim comment because they know what Moshe is going to say and say for Devarim. It gives a different perspective. It sounds like this came from the people. It doesn't come from God. But again, we know that information from Devarim. Let's just take what we know to see here in Bamidbar. It sounds like, let's go with this. And Hashem says this is a good idea, that this is something appropriate. And so we're told, Vayishlach osa Moshe mibar paran api Hashem, that they're sent from Midbar Paran, again, Al Pi Hashem, that Hashem is the one who sanctions this. Kulam Anashim Rav Nev Neshohema. And then a list of the names. We're given the names of these 12 spies. Obviously, the two most famous ones are going to be Kalev ben Yefuna and Yehoshua ben Nun. Eilu Shmos Anashim. I'm skipping a whole bunch of psukim. These are the names of the men. Asher Shalach Moshe Lasuras Aretz. And Moshe sent again Lasur, not Laragel, but Lasuras Aretz. And then the next pasuk, Vayishlach Osa Moshe, again, Lasuris Eretz Kanan, Vayom Eliyah. Now, here are the instructions. This is very important. What were they told to do? Right, what was the game plan here? What was this all about? What was the purpose of sending these spies? You know, one can immediately ask and question, what's the need for spies? Right? Now, Hashem says, I'm going to give you the land of Israel. Okay, let's go. You know, God says it's a great land, Eretz Avas Chalav Dvash, land flowing with milk and honey. What else I need to know? It's just like, you know, when God gave the Torah, God didn't, call 12 leaders and say, hey, why don't you check out the Torah, see if it makes sense, see if you like it, and then tell the people what you think. There was no such thing. God just said, I'm giving the Torah. And then Hashem gave the Torah. There was no conversation. There was no discussion. There's no advance release, today, these books, Bolton's book, you get the advance, CNN gets an advanced copy of the book and can then tell everything that's in the book. So there's no advance release of the Torah. It was given to everyone at the same time.
Are we allowed to ask questions? Or you prefer not?
Sure.
So, but we have Midrashim saying that's not true, right? All these Midrashim about Hashem offering the Torah to all the peoples and them saying, well, what's in it? And them saying, for various reasons. So it's not quite, at least according to the Midrashim, right? There was a little
As in a deeper level, the Midrashim are symbolizing why God did not give it to other people. Right? And what was in there that they would not be so excited about. But the simple reading of the Torah, clearly, and ultimately, in terms of what really happened, the Jewish people just accepted it. Nasa ben Ishmael, okay, we're in. And there's no need to get look at it in advance. That's just I want to make that point. And in fact, it maybe even bolster your question or two. I think it makes it even stronger. Is that you see? There's a deficiency if you don't believe, and you see these other people needed to look at it before they. And so why do the Jewish people not need to look at the Torah, but they do need to look at the land of Israel? And unless, here what we're saying is that, no, Hashem felt here it was important for them to look at the land. Again, let's go with a simple pshat. Not that they asked for this, but that Hashem told them to do this. Okay, so that showed there's something positive about spying out the land. So what was so important? What was of such value? So here the Moshe gives very explicit and clear instructions. Vayomer Eliham, Alu Zeh BaNegev V'Alisem HaSahar. He tells them exactly where to go to the Negev, to go to the south, to go towards the desert, and then to go towards the mountain. Now the mountain can be probably means the mountain of Lebanon, right? To Lebanon. That's probably. From south to north. That's where he's telling them to go. It could be, I think, Chazal might say Har might be Yerushalayim, Har Moriah, to check that out as well. Again, if we're just going for this simple explanation, check out the entire land from south to north. And then, let's check out the land. It sounds like topography. Check out what's the land like. And then the people, besides the land, what about the people? Are they mighty? Are they numerous? Are they few? Now, why is God giving these instructions? So one reason could be in terms of from a purely military perspective. You're going to be fighting some wars. You're going to need to know the physical layout of the land. And you also are going to need to know what you're up against. Well, you know, with the people, how should you best prepare? You mean, are you going to be facing massive armies? What's their strength? Or it could be what God might be trying to show them is that you're going to be coming to a land where there are a lot of mountains and fortifications and strong people. And in spite of all that, you're going to inherit the lands. In other words, I'm going to show you that this is all going to be miraculous, that this is all being given to you by me, and that I am willing this, and this is what my desire. So I want you to see how challenging the land is and how formidable the people are. Continues, Uma ha'aretz asher hu yoshev ba hatova hi imra'a, and is the land where it dwells, is it good or is it bad? Again, good or bad could mean lots of things. It could be in terms of the produce which is there. It could be in terms of how well things grow. Are there nice beaches there? Are there nice pastures? You know, a place for the kids to run around and play. And now we're at the cities, right? There's already cities that are built there. You're not going to a desolate land. Ashehu yoshev bahena hamachamim ibn sarim. Right? Are they open or are they fortified? So again, you know, what's going to be the challenge here? How difficult is it going to be to conquer it? If I'm not mistaken, Rashi says it's actually going to be a bigger challenge if they're open. If they're fortified, that means that they're afraid, right? That they have to protect themselves with these large walls because they can't defend themselves. But if they're open, then they're pretty strong people. So again, but a reconnaissance perspective. And then here is a focus next on the actual produce of the lands. Right, is the land is that you're going to? Is it the way they translate it here? How is the land? Like, is it a fat land? Hashmenahi imraza. Is it fertile? Is it lean? Ayeshba eitzim. Are there trees there? What type of produce? These chachtem rachtem epi aretz. And also, you should not forget to strengthen yourselves and take from the fruit of the lands. V'hayamim, you made the Korean of them. And it happens to be that this was the time in which they were going, was the time of when the grapes were most ripe. So, yeah, why that is here is also open for discussion. Why it needs to tell us, you know, Rashi is that they were very busy during the harvest. They wouldn't be noticing you. It also could be a time where you would find the luscious fruit and be an opportune time to be there to see how good the produce is. And that's it. That's the instructions. So it seems to me like there's a number of different reasons why Hashem is giving these instructions. Number one, to get excited about the land, to see how wonderful and beautiful the land and its produce and the topography, what it looks like. And number two seems to be done in terms of preparation. You're going to be fighting some wars, you're going to be fighting some battles. You need to know what you're up against and to prepare for that. Or as I suggested a few moments ago, you're going to see how challenging it is, but not to worry. I'm going to take care of everything, even though it's going to look very formidable, but not to worry. And again, so why would Hashem instruct this? Why would Hashem, aren't you risking something? What happens if they come back with a bad report? So either Hashem knew they were not going to come back to the bad report, they were going to come back and show how wonderful the land is, and or they're going to have now some information how to best prepare for the fight, or they're going to come back a little nervous, but what would happen? Moshe would say, okay, yeah, it's what's impossible. Just like it was impossible for us to leave Egypt, but just like God took us out of Egypt with a strong hand, even though we were slaves and the Egyptians were our masters, so too, nothing to worry here. We've been here before. We've seen Hashem's intervention and miracles like we saw in the past are going to come once again, and everything's going to be great. And so to be mechazik, to strengthen the people. Again, from that perspective, there's nothing wrong with sending the spies. It sounds like it's a great idea for all these reasons. So what happens? The Torah continues. V'aluvia suras aretz. And again, I suggested before from the Tziv, the word vayasuru means a general information. We're not looking here, unlike the Haftarah, the Shabbos. The Haftarah is the story of Yeshua sending spies specifically to Yericho, which is, and the other word is liragel. It's much more focused, very specific focused information. This is more general information. Lasura is kind of like going to college. You're trying to, you know, study different disciplines and just to get a general sense of various aspects of the humanities and things like that. Here you get a general sense of the country. So again, to keep on emphasizing this word, lasura, 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 viasuru. So vialu viasuras aretz, mibibard sin adrachov levoch amas. They go all over from one end to the other. Vialu v'negev, vialu adchevron. They go from the Negev, from the south. They go towards Chevron. They're heading towards the north. Right? Like the Negev, imagine Beersheva. Another heading further north, and they come to Chevron. Visham Achiman Sheshai Visamei Yedei Hanak. And there's some sort of people where the Torah assumes that we know who these people are. There's some sort of individuals that apparently were very well known. Right? These children of the Hanak, the Torah says. The way it's translated, some of the Forshim say this is like a giant. These are strong, large people. And again, if you were someone living 3,800 years ago and the Torah is given, you would know immediately who these people are. And it would be a little, somewhat fearful to hear their names. And we're told about specifically the city of Chevron that it had been built 7 years before, so on, in Egypt. And Rashi and Mefarshim here explain the significance of why the Torah needs to tell us about this information of 7 years before. Rashi says, "Afshir shabanas cham es chavon a kanan benoah katan konim shivna es tzorim mitzrayim benoah gadol." Rashi's bothered by it doesn't make sense of chavon would be before Egypt would be built. El shaisa mevuna mikol tuv. It starts telling you how great it was, that the Chevron was like, someone didn't even compare to how wonderful Chevron is. You've been to Chevron. Chevron is, there's lots of vineyards in Chevron. It's in the mountains. It's very beautiful, Chevron. Vayavoa nachal eshko v'yichusot misham zmora v'eshko anavim echad v'yisau b'moch b'shnayim. And then the famous imagery of them cutting down these large cluster of grapes, like the Kedem, I think it's the Kedem symbol on the wine of, you know, the two people having to carry the grapes because they're so large. But we forget, not only does it talk about grapes that they took, but they also took pomegranates and te'inim and then figs. And they even give it a name about the cluster that they found there. They were so probably amazed at the size of the fruit. And okay, that's the end of the story. 40 days, a 40-day reconnaissance mission. And so what happens? According to this, not that much, right? They go north, south, all over. They find these fruit, and they see this particular family. Again, that somehow we should know who this family is. And somehow there's something significant of this family. And the Torah then says they return. They come to Moshe and to Aaron, to the entire congregation, back to Midbar Paran, and they report. They report, v'yeshivu osam davar v'eskol eida v'yarum es priaretz. Right, the first thing everyone notices is, you know, you notice this fruit, right? That's what everyone's looking at. Like they're talking, everyone's looking at the fruit. So the people see the fruit. And they tell them a story, and they say, we did exactly as we were told. We went to the land, we came to the land that we were sent. The gams, avas, chalav, devash, hui, vizer, piria. And indeed, God has been correct. It is a land flowing with milk and honey, and here is its fruit to prove it. So far, so good. But then one word changes it all. Ephes, however, but. All right, you always get nervous when someone says, however. However, Ephes, ki azam. The people there, they are very strong, right? They're powerful people. Hayoshed Baret, Ve'arim B'tzuros G'dos Mod. and the cities are exceedingly fortified. Now, if you remember, we said before from Rashi, now this was not appropriate what they just said. Because Rashi said if they're fortified, that means they're afraid and they're scared. But they didn't. They have a different perspective. And again, let's imagine Rashi didn't say what he said. If it's fortified, it's going to be very difficult to conquer it. So the people are strong. The cities are fortified. The Gamli, they have Anak Reinushav. And by the way, and apparently everyone knew who these Anak were. You remember those people who lived in Hebron? The Anak are there. And again, for us, like we have like, who are these people? We never heard of them. But again, it sounds like if you lived 300 years ago, you knew who they were. It's like a saying that, I don't know today what you would say, that the mafia is there. Someone from the back in the day from the Jesse James is there. Like something that's going to be very fearful. They're living there. And then they continue. And now let me tell you about the neighborhood, they say. Right? You want to hear about who your neighbors are going to be. The first word, if you're the Jewish people, who's the one nation who you're petrified about? So you might say Egypt, but Egypt, they have a lot of problems. Egypt, right, there, all the soldiers were killed at the seashore. So the next nation the last people you want to see, of course, is Amalek, right? Because they attacked you. And what's the first word out of their mouths? Amalek. All right, we should all make noise. Amalek Yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev. Amalek's in the south, right? Yes, if someone's interested in making Aliyah today, right? So you tell them, and by the way, guess who's in Israel? Hamas, Islamic Jihad. And if that's not enough, by the way, you should know that there's the Muslim Brotherhood to the south, and there's Hezbollah to the north, right? And just a little bit over to the east is Iran. That doesn't sound so good. Amalek Yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev, Vachiti, Vayvusi, Vamari, Yoshev Be'ar. And you know what's up in the north? It's Hezbollah. Right? It's the Chiti, the Vusi, the Amori. Haknani Yoshev Olayam. Right? Who's on the sea? It's Hamas. Kanani. Vayana Yadain, and by the Jordan. So, they're not commenting yet. Right, they're not, giving their opinion, but all of a sudden they're presenting that this doesn't sound so good, to say the least. Right, this is there's some dangerous people living in this area. These cities are well fortified, and immediately the Torah says, "Vayas Kalev." Kalev tries to calm things down because there must be murmuring. People are talking. They're getting nervous. Everyone's talking to their neighbor. Vayas Kalev, Kalev calms him down, he quiets him down. Asam al Moshe, right before Moshe. Vayomer, and he says, and this is probably what God wanted to happen, what Kalev is now going to say. This is what I'm suggesting, that God knows they're going to say all these things. And it's going to look impossible. And by nature, it was impossible, would have been impossible. But, Vayomer, Alona Lev, Yerashto Sak, Yechonu Chalot. No, we're going to go. We're going to make Aliyah. We can do it. Right? We can do it. And again, I want to add, just like we did it when we left Egypt, Hashem, even though it logically made no sense, but Hashem made it happen, it will happen here as well. So at that point, it should have been over. Right? It should have been end of the discussion. It should have been the people, they gave a report. The report was an honest report. It's probably what God had in mind. And now you have Kalev, who's going to, give some perspective. And then, okay, go to sleep, and Hashem will lead us to the promised land. The problem is the spies. Right? The spies didn't let up, the other 10 spies. And they kept on pushing. And that's why I believe that ultimately they were punished so severely, because it was their fault at the end of the day. They didn't have the perspective that Kalev had. For some reason, they were unwilling, unable, and all the commentators of fortune tried to get into these guys' minds. Like, what were they thinking? Why did they do this? Why didn't they have the faith? They have some other agenda. There's lots of different opinions of what happened here. But they immediately respond and they say, "Vanashima shalu imo amru lo nuchal lalos elam." No, we cannot do it. We cannot go up to this nation, to this place. Kichazaku imenu. It's us. They're too strong for us. We can't do it. And now the Torah now gives some commentary. Here the narrator chimes in. Vayotziu dibas haaretz asher Torah osa. They gave dibas haaretz, right? They brought forth an evil report, right? They had some agenda here. And they purposely now continue to pile on the bad news. El b'nei Yisrael emor haaretz asher avarnu bo l'asur osa eretz ocheles yisraeli. This is a land that devours its inhabitants. And Rashi, I believe, points out that why is it devouring its inhabitants? They saw people being buried. There were people that were dying. And that could be there was a plague, some pandemic that was going on. According to Chazal, that was intentional. God wanted people to be so involved with burying their dead, not to notice these spies. But again, they interpreted that this land just is not a great place to be in. It's a dangerous place. People of measure, either people of means, or again, of giants. And again, these b'nei anak, again, keep on emphasizing these b'nei anak, these nephilim. The way it's translated is that we were like grasshoppers in our eyes, and so we were in their eyes. And this is another mistake that they made. That how do you know how they felt and feel about you? And also, don't diminish yourself. Don't think so lowly of yourself. Have some confidence, right? Pick yourselves up, and you can do this. But they again, they're imagining, right? Often we imagine what people think about us, and we don't say, hey, forget what they think. Let me just do what I'm supposed to do. And so they're going on and on that it's not going to happen. It's too dangerous. Batisa kol aida, but you knew at kolam. And now at this point, there's just in the camp. There's tears. There's crying. There's wailing. There's just like an uncontrolled commotion and noise. And everyone is talking. Imagine us talking to their neighbors and saying, "No, well, we can't do this. This is terrible. What's Moshe done to us? Where has he led us?" And the Torah continues, "Vayifku kol am b'laylahu." This is a very famous pasuk, and people cry the entire night. And there's a famous Gemara here that God says, "Because you cried for no reason tonight, I'm going to give you lots of reasons, unfortunately, to cry in the future on this night." What night was it? It was the ninth of Av. And this is the night of Jewish tragedies, destructions of the Batei Mikdash, the temples, and many other Jewish tragedies throughout our history, because they cried for the wrong reasons. And then, I guess the next morning, they're not done. Vayilonu al Moshe v'Aaron. They go to complain to Moshe and Aaron. Kol b'nei Yisrael. It's not just a few. It's not just the spies. It's not just the some rabble rousers. It's everyone. Kol b'nei Yisrael. They're united in their feelings at this moment. By Yomer Aliham, Kol Eida. Again, everyone, the entire congregation says, Lu Masnu be'eretz Mitzrayim, Oba Midbar Hazeh Lu Masnu. And what do they? What do the people say? Better we have died in Egypt. Better that we die in this desert than enter the land. What are we putting? What are we trying to make happen here? Right, what's going to happen to us is going to be horrible. Lama, and then they go back even further. And why should we be brought to this land just to be killed by the sword? The shenu v'tapino yelavaz halof tol lano shuv Mitzrayim. What's going to happen to the women? What's going to happen to the children? They were taken captives. Men are going to be killed. Children, wives, going to be taken captives. Better we go back to Egypt, which is incredible. Better we be slaves in Egypt than face certain death in the land of Israel. Vayipol Moshe v'Aaron al pneihem, Moshe and Aaron fall on their face. V'fnei kol kol hadas bnei Yisrael. Again, I mentioned when I started off, I'll only read a few more psukim, and then I'm going to end it here. But I mentioned when I started off that Sefer Devarim is a very different perspective. Right? Moshe is much more active when he retells the story, retells his role than the role here. And why that is, that's for another time to discuss why that is. There are a lot of interesting reasons and suggestions why Moshe gives a very different description. But here it seems Moshe is very passive. Moshe does not at all respond. Seems even to be paralyzed on some level. But then who does try to calm things down? The Yeshua Benon, the Kalib Ben Yifunam, Minat Tarim, As Aretz, Karu Big Dehem, Yeshua and Kalib, they tear Kriya, right? Tearing Kriya is not a good sign, right? Death, destruction, Chorban. By Yomer, they say, Al Kaldas Bnei Yisrael, Lemor, Ha Aretz, Asher Avru, Va, Lasur, Osa, Tova, Aretz, Ma'od, Ma'od. No, it's a wonderful land. Exceedingly wonderful. And again, here, I think this is what Hashem wanted to happen originally. In Chafetz Banu Hashem, if God so desires it, we'll go in and he'll give it to us. Eretz Asher, he's a Vaskla Devash, this land which is flowing with milk and honey. Ach Hashem, but don't, they say, Al Timru, don't rebel against God. Vatem Al Timru es Am Aretz. And what do they say? Don't rebel against Hashem. You should not fear the people, the land, for they are our bread. Right? Just like you eat bread without any efforts, we're going to easily defeat them. Their protection has departed from them. God is with us. There's nothing to fear. But at this point, it's too late. Right? The other 10 spies have created such a commotion and they've created such fear and trepidation. The people aren't not only they're not willing to listen, but last pasuk we'll read now. The people were ready to kill them. They're ready to kill Yeshua and Kalev, at the very least. Maybe also Moshe and Aaron. Uchvod Hashem, the glory of God, Nirab Almoed. This is not a good sign when all of a sudden God appears at the Almoed. You know, something not great is going to happen, a Kol B'nai Yisrael. So, it's such a sad story. Again, as I began, it should not be surprising based upon the events of last week's Parsha. The people were just not yet ready. It was too quick a time for them to be able to transform and to change. And it was a failure of leadership here. Again, we're Moshe Aaron was for another time, but these 10 spies somehow they misunderstood what they were supposed to do. They got the people caught up in a frenzy, and that's why again the punishment is that the people are going to have to the people are not yet ready to enter the land. They're going to have to die out over the course of 40 years and the next generation. But the 10 spies, what happened to the 10 spies? They didn't live for 40. They died right then and there. God's going to kill them. If you plug them, God's going to kill them on the spot because they were the problem. They could have risen to the moment. They could have been, had they gone along with Kalev and Yeshua, it would have been so different, right? They would have reassured the people and told them that we can do this. Like Kalev tries. Had they kept quiet, it would have been effective. But the fact that they made all that noise, even again when Kalev Yeshua try again to show some perspective, it's too late. And it's a delicate balance between being wise and being smart and making a sensible decisions. But also in this particular case, God was on their side, right? And this was a miraculous existence that they were living. But they couldn't appreciate that. And that's the problem throughout the 40 years in the desert, that there's a continuously back and forth. It's a story of Tanakh, in essence. It's the people, seeing God's intervention, but then when things calm down and things sort of get back to normal, not seeing God and being distracted by so many other things around them and turning away from Hashem. And this is the story of us to this day. of feeling our confidence and recognizing that we do what Hashem asks us to do. So Hashem will be with us, and balancing making thoughtful decisions, but also keeping in mind that we are our people. We live l'malam natava, above the love of nature, and that Hashem will be with us, but we need to be with Hashem. We need to partner with Hashem, and we get distracted all the time. That other things get in the way, and we forget Hashem, and other things pull us in so many different directions. And we have these reminders from time to time, and the goal of those reminders is to hang on to those reminders, right? They should carry us with us when we're just dealing with the day to day. I guess we still need to learn the lesson, and that's why we need to read this parsha each and every year to remind us about these mistakes that we've made time and again, but also recognize that alil nala, that we can do it, right? That we were given this this divine promise, this divine assurance, and if we do our part and we partner with Hashem, so wonderful things can and will occur to us. Okay, thank you very much, everyone.